On this episode of Aviator Cast, the Hobby Gap, professional flying for the recreational pilot.
Welcome, aviators, to another episode of Aviator Cast. Load up your flight bag with useful flight training topics, interviews, and aviation passion. Let's kick the tires and light the fires. Coming to you from Angle of Attack Headquarters in Homer, Alaska, here's your host and flight instructor, Chris Palmer.
All right, everybody, welcome to Aviator Cast. Great to have you here today. I am sitting in my friend's office here in Camarillo, California. I've got the simulator here in the background, and I'm just ready to rock and roll on this podcast today. I just wrote everything down and got it ready. I'm kind of excited about the topic. So maybe you are a sort of pilot that you're just going to be flying for fun. You're not planning on doing it professionally or anything, but you still want to be safe, obviously, just like a professional. And maybe you want to step outside the normal statistics of those people that get a private or an instrument and kind of fall into one of the more dangerous parts of the pilot community, and you want to be outside of that sort of data and be someone that's extra safe and really building things in your favor. I know for me, I'm very interested in this because I have a family, and I tell you guys all the time, I always want to return home to my family safe, and that's very important to me. And I think a lot of us are like that. Family is very important. We, you know, hardly anyone has a death wish. So yeah, there are things we can do in aviation for sure to better our chances of having a long and a safe and an enjoyable time. I'm not even going to say career, because that's not really what you're going for, but a long, you know, journey through aviation through all your years, where you just continue to enjoy it and it's part of your life. So we're going to jump through this podcast now. I think it's going to be very useful for you, because first I'm going to define kind of how people fall out of proficiency and their knowledge and why that can be dangerous in aviation. And then we are going to talk about a way, pretty specifically, a way that you can plan on always growing and remaining proficient and doing good things. So let's go into that. Let's get started on professional flying for the recreational pilot. So first we want to start with why. Why do people fall out of proficiency? Why do they fall out of the knowledge or the skills that they have from when they're at their peak, when say they're at their check ride? So after your check ride is kind of interesting, because then you're just completely left to your own devices. You can go out there in the real world and you can essentially do whatever you want. Obviously, we're going to keep to the regulations and we want to keep to our training, but things start to slip away little by little. You know, you start to fly around, you're enjoying your new license and all that it brings, that freedom of being able to carry passengers and the fun things that you get to do or the great places you get to go. Maybe you're even just flying by yourself and really enjoying going out and exploring the world. So, and maybe that's not how you enjoy flying. Maybe you like sharing flying, which is definitely how I am. And you start to take your family and friends and just start to have these really enjoyable experiences. But it's been a while since you've taken a check ride, since you've even had any training. And you notice that things just start to slip away little by little. So you start to notice that you're really apprehensive about stalls, which is not a bad thing. That's something that obviously we learn in training to recover from, because we are trying to avoid stalls in all normal operations. So, but you're really actually starting to get apprehensive about it, maybe even scared of it. And there's that fear that you could stall. Your landings aren't as consistently good as they used to be, and they're certainly not on target. You're kind of getting there, but it could be better. You don't feel comfortable handling crosswinds. It's just something that a lot of people end up struggling with. Kind of a higher skill is being able to do good crosswind landings. I would say even crosswind takeoffs can be tricky. I see a lot of people doing crosswind takeoffs incorrectly. And maybe even the thought of going somewhere far from home really puts kind of some knots in your stomach. And of course, there's a lot to go on there, which is probably mostly a knowledge component of doing your weight and balance and the weather and the flight planning and talking to air traffic control, all that stuff, going somewhere unfamiliar. that is something that does give people anxiety in aviation when they're flying those cross countries. So, you know, you start to get further away from your training, or you're getting further away from your flight training, and you notice that you're just not as confident and proficient as you used to be. Then things really start to slip away, especially knowledge. You know, I'm 34 years old, which is not old. I know that I still have a lot of great years ahead of me, young and vibrant years, really. But even for me, I noticed that from the time I was in my 20s to where I'm at now, I just don't hang on to knowledge the same that I used to. I certainly don't learn it the same that I used to. And so I've got to be really careful about that, right? I know that I have that limitation now, and so I need to be extra vigilant about staying on top of it. But those things for sure start to slip away. You know, for me, when I had a gap in training and then I went for my advanced ratings, it was amazing the things that I forgot about. I forgot almost everything or misconstrued everything, you know, crossed wires, whatever it is, thought that this rule was applying to that rule. And it was really quite shocking how much I had forgotten. And so it happens. If we're not on top of it, that knowledge does slip away. They say, there's a saying out there that says flying is a perishable skill. And I would also say that the knowledge that we have in aviation is also perishable, just as much as the skill part. Sometimes I feel like part of flying an airplane or like riding a bike, it just takes a few laps around the pattern or the track to get back into it. But the knowledge part, I think, slips away. For me, I felt like I was even full on forgetting things that I had once. I knew them at one point because I had to pass a check ride, but I didn't know them anymore. So you start to, you know, those things start to slip away, and you're flying along and you forget about what to do with that part of the checklist and why exactly you're doing that, or what frequency you're supposed to be on, or where you'd even look up that frequency, and what your instructor said about once you find that frequency and how to talk to air traffic control, what you need to say at the beginning of that radio call. And all these little things just start to slowly slip away. But those little things, because there's so much going on in flying, they slip away on a broad scale, and you're actually losing a lot. You're losing a lot of tiny things, and it's going away. You know, snowflakes are very tiny objects, right? But there's millions and trillions of them, billions, trillions, that fall and create a big pile. So think of that in reverse. You're kind of losing a snowflake at a time, and eventually you're going to take away that pile of knowledge. I just came up with that. That is an awesome analogy. I'm going to have to use that again. If I remember, I probably won't remember. Okay, so I want to give you a couple specific examples, okay? Because these are some things I see that slip away for people, and I think you're probably going to be relate, at least on the second one, and that is airspeed and airspace. Airspace, yes, that airspace thing. I'm sure a lot of you can, if you've been in flying for a while or been away from your training for a while, you can definitely relate. So one thing I see, let's start with the airspeed first. One thing I see with pilots that have been away from their training for a while is that they start to add a knot, one knot or 1 mile per hour onto their approach speed. Like maybe once, they add like one knot a month for how long they've been away from training, maybe up to 15 knots over. I don't think people like keep adding, but you know, they keep adding one knot to just get more and more comfortable with that buffer away from where they know the stall is, where they know where that spin accident can happen in the base to final turn. They feel like they're adding extra margin of safety by adding that. They may not even know they're adding it. They may not even know what their approach speed should be, et cetera, et cetera. Okay, that stuff is just slipping away from them. So they start to add a little bit more speed to become more comfortable with the airplane. I see this all the time. This makes for faster approaches, longer landings, the inability to land at shorter fields, because at shorter fields, you have to be at the right energy state in the airplane and basically right on your airspeed. Airspeed, at least in smaller airplanes for short fields, almost becomes irrelevant because you're really stick and rudder flying the airplane. But I say that with a caveat. So shorter fields become pretty difficult, if not dangerous, if you still have all that extra speed going in. So the disconnect here is that you've been away from the maneuvers you've done for a while. Maybe you never did connect the fact that airspeed is not life, that airspeed is just an indication of what is going on in the airplane, which is the actual angle of attack. That's what we're really looking for, is the angle of attack. Of course, it's invisible to us unless we have one of the new angle of attack indicators and how the wing is actually flying. And a combination of the angle of attack with load factor and coordination. This especially comes into play when we're in the pattern. All those things come together in kind of this critical mass on how we need to be operating in the pattern and how we need to be landing. So that has nothing to do with airspeed except on a surface level, where in normal flight, in normal banks, airspeed does give us an indication of a quality flying state in the airplane, but it's not everything. It's susceptible to errors, so on and so forth. So the fact that we're adding onto that airspeed, thinking that's what's making us safer, is even further proof that that those who are doing this, the falling into this trap that happens to so many people, are not truly understanding what's happening behind the scenes. If it was truly understood, you know, that critical mass, that combination of angle of attack, load factor, and coordination, they would understand that they could still spin on that base to final turn. If they turn too steep and they're uncoordinated, they can still spin at a higher speed. And especially if you start to pull, there's a lot of things that come into play there with that critical mass of angle of attack, load factor, and coordination that become a problem. Even past the base of final, talking more so about maybe like a short field, but you may find that you have too much airspeed in the flare. That means that you'll just keep floating and floating and floating, and the airplane won't really want to settle down because now you're in ground effect and have way too much extra energy. There's too much to expend, and you're expending it in the flare, or you're just landing too fast, even if you manage to do it smoothly. And you could roll out much longer than you need to because the airplane has that forward momentum. You could even porpoise with all that extra energy. You could have extra energy if something were to go wrong to veer off the runway. This is very critical when we're talking about tailwheel operations, any number of other circumstances that happen. I mean, basically, you're carrying way too much energy into the landing environment where a lot of things can go wrong. And those things that can go wrong are exacerbated by a higher energy state, which in this case means too high of an airspeed. So it just goes to show you that with that perishing skill that you have that's going on, that you know, those snowflakes that are leaving, you are slowly getting closer to more dangerous situations, even though you might feel like you're okay. So that's airspeed. Airspace. So at the check ride, you know your airspace, right? We all pilots need to know it. There's the typical, hey, I'm the DPE, I'm gonna point right here, tell me what airspace I have from surface level all the way up to space. And that's a typical question that a DPE, a designated pilot examiner, can ask. It's probably been a really long time since you've been asked that question, but month after month, year after year, you haven't looked at a chart, you haven't reviewed the weather minimums for those charts, the communication procedures for those charts, what's expected within that airspace, maybe even speeds within that airspace, and so on and so forth. And you start to lose the 3D picture of airspace as well, which is very important when you're trying to strategize how you're going to move in the sky to get in or around or through or whatever that airspace that is within your path. So then you start to maybe fly further away from the airspace to just totally avoid it because you don't really know and you don't want to break the rules. You want to be good. Or inadvertently and ignorantly, you break a regulation because you didn't know that you weren't supposed to do that. So even that, all of that potential to break the regulations, whether you knew it or not, or just stay completely away, starts to lead to other uncertainties and the desire to just kind of ignore air traffic control or not call them or you know, things like that. That leads to people not talking. I think that that lack of talking, that lack of trust, that lack of even motor mouth skills, or muscle, let me just call it muscle memories, like muscle memory of the tongue. I know that sounds odd, but I just feel like when I'm really proficient with communications, it just rolls off my tongue. And it's, I almost feel like it's muscle memory more than anything else. Almost like how I can talk here on this podcast, you know. I think a lot of it has to do with the fact that I'm actually talking. I'm more of an introverted person, but definitely on the radio, I need that practice to be able to actually say things. And when I'm further away from that, people can just like stop talking. That lack of talking can lead to conflicts in the airspace, collision problems. Maybe you even going to an extreme, bring that apprehension into the pattern where it's very, very important to have pilot to pilot communication. So that is, that's really interesting as well to think of it that way. But you can see that as you lose these things little by little, what I'm trying to articulate here with both the airspeed and airspace examples is you're moving closer and closer to incidents that can become very critical. And that's happening over a longer period of time than, say, what we usually talk about in aviation, which is how did an accident happen and what happened from when the pilot took off to when they had the accident, what were their decisions and how did it lead to that. And what I'm presenting here is how over the months and weeks and years, whatever, have the little decisions or lack of knowledge or lack of preparation or lack of, I guess, like, what's the word I'm trying to find? Ambition. The lack of ambition to grow and learn and move into a new part of aviation, a new part of your flying skills, a new part of your aviation knowledge, that those things slowly slip away and you get closer and closer over time, like a long period of time, to potential aviation accidents. So that's what I'm trying to articulate here. And that is why the data says that overall, if you are staying within the flight training environment, if you continue to fly with an instructor, maybe you're not even in the flight training environment, but if you continue to fly with a flight instructor, continue to grow your skills, you are far, far less likely to be involved in an aviation accident. And it's the data proves that it's predicated on that. Where I have received that data is from a book called The Killing Zone. I did a podcast on it very early on in this podcast where I interviewed the author. Really interesting, but just goes to show that it's actually the training that matters for the safe pilots more than anything else, okay? So what do professionals do? So if you were to go through your career and you were continually building hours, that's kind of where we're going to go with the next part of the podcast here. You're going to continue to build hours, continue to go toward a job, say at an airline or an on-demand operator, whatever it is. You're going to keep growing in the process up to that quote-unquote professional pilot level. And what I'm meaning by here is you're actually getting paid to fly, okay? So professionals, people that are aiming to be a professional, they keep building hours. They keep working toward things. They're staying in the flight training environment like I just mentioned, which is very important. It's the most important part. They're under the watchful eye of an instructor. That instructor can give them guidance and mentorship and share their skills, even impart them their skills. It can even be sort of an osmosis thing where the student emulates the safety mindset of the instructor or multiple instructors, whatever it is. That is a safe place to be and definitely has some reduced risk. It is not without risk. There is still risk in everything in aviation and in life, but you continue in a relatively safe environment. So through that process of continuing your training, you would continue to grow, you would push yourself, the knowledge would grow, you would solidify knowledge that you've had. It took me a while to learn that airspace thing. You know, I feel very confident in it now, but yeah, it was touch and go for a while, over years, until really I was teaching it, and then it got a lot better. So you start to solidify that knowledge, and then you improve your skills across the board. You know, you're flying often, you're required to do certain things for your check ride that test your skills even more, that test your knowledge of the airplane even more, and you just learn and grow. So it definitely doesn't happen overnight. It happens little by little. You know, right now we're actually kind of doing the opposite of my snowflake analogy, where now we're adding, because we're staying in the professional environment, we're just adding one little snowflake at a time, one little experience at a time, one bit of knowledge at a time. Little by little, we pile up to a nice big fluffy pile of snow. Do what you want with it, okay? You can go snowboarding, you can build a snow cone, you can go inside and have a cozy little fire, whatever it is. I love snow, it's great. And I say that coming from sunny California. But anyway, I love snow. So you're just building that snow pile, okay? And you get to have fun with it, whatever you're doing with it. So, little by little, going through your training, you're growing a lot. You grow a lot through flight training because there is a lot required of you, and you have to become a better person, and you have to dig down and overcome your plateaus. You have to learn new knowledge and just add. So once you get that pilot job, it doesn't stop there. In fact, it becomes even more critical, because now what the FAA is saying is, hey, you are now being paid to fly. And generally, when you're being paid to fly, you are going to be carrying the public. And so we are going to put even more regulations on you and require you to do more training. So then people start getting type ratings. They go and learn specifically how to fly certain airplanes and how to operate in those airplanes. Okay, that's a cool one to be able to do. Go fly specifically in an airplane, have a 3-week long, very intensive, sometimes even longer course on how to fly a jet, how to fly a twin engine, how to fly a transport aircraft, whatever it is. You go and you really, really, really get deep into the airplane, which is quite a cool thing. They definitely, meaning those that are hired, those that are flying for hire, go through recurrent training. There are a lot of requirements along those lines. Some are 6 months, some are a year. Some are voluntary on a tighter schedule, and everything in between. Some other supplemental training that airlines and operations go through. You will go through recurrent training for that type rating even. So on and on and on. Now they're kind of mandating, they're requiring, they're making sure that you're staying proficient, because you're, you know, they don't care if you kill yourself. But now you're carrying people that matter, and people that are innocent, that aren't your family, that don't know any better, and that are totally in your care. So you have to be a professional. It's mandated that you stay in that realm. So the pilots are then monitored in a way throughout their career, as to make sure that their skills don't deteriorate, and that they continue to do things in a quality way, that they continue to learn and grow. And that's why those pilots that are very deep in their careers and have been doing it for a long time are respected, because there is something to say for that time spent in an airplane, those years of growth, those extra snowflakes that they've had over those years that add on top of their pile of knowledge, and you just keep growing and growing and growing over the years. Now, this podcast today is not about those professional pilots. What we want to do is we want to take a step back and look at the big picture and find out how we as recreational pilots, and I won't necessarily say we, because I consider myself a professional pilot, a professional instructor, but if you're a recreational pilot flying for fun, flying for personal reasons, and don't really have the intention of going into a career in aviation, what can you do to remain safe, to put yourself in that safe category of flying? What can you do? So do you want to remain safe? Do you want to keep growing? Do you want to be confident in your skills and knowledge? Do you want to be professional, or rather proficient? Do you want to be a professional pilot during recreational and personal operations? Are you committed to doing that? So really, this would be a commitment, because what I'm going to talk about next and what we'll talk about going on here is how you can do that. Just a couple ideas. I think that there's probably a larger conversation to have there, but let's talk about that. So I call this committing to the climb, okay? You are going to be climbing, you're going to be improving, you're going to be getting to those nice blue, beautiful skies up above where hopefully you have a nice tailwind and you can get to your destination quickly and see the curvature of the earth since the earth is round and not flat. Anyway, all right, so commit to the climb. So consider an instrument rating and maybe even a commercial. Even if you aren't planning on using either one of those, it's an opportunity to improve your skills. You don't have to have, say, like a second or first class medical to actually get a commercial license. You just have to have those to actually do the commercial operation. So theoretically, even if you didn't qualify medically, you could still get a commercial license just to gain the skills that are required by that license. So it'll help you grow. Requiring more of you, just as it did those other professional pilots. You're gonna have to go through the exact same thing. You'll still be under the watchful eye of an instructor for a longer period of time as you're growing through that new knowledge and those new procedures and really rounding off and improving what you're doing. Now, all that said, I'm gonna take a step back here, go off script and my notes here and say that it is also very important for you to be able to go out in the real world and be comfortable and experience things on your own. I'm not saying you always need to have an instructor in the right seat to babysit you. You need to have the skills, the humility, the knowledge, the safe mindset to be able to go out there in the real world and experience things. So there is going to be that anyway required in the time that you're building. So just keep in mind that I'm not saying you have to be with an instructor the whole time. You should be able to go out there and improve and grow anyway. So as you get those skills, say that you commit to this, you commit to the climb. You say, hey, Chris, I'm going to do the instrument rating. I'm going to do the commercial as well. And you're going to do that just because you think it's the safe thing to do. More options are going to be available to you if things were to go south in your fun flying, your recreational flying, your personal business flying, whatever it is, that you will continue to grow. We were talking about that, but you'll also have more options available to you. So say that you're not the type that really plans on going flying in hardcore IFR weather, but you're out there on a cross-country trip and the weather closes in around you, but you have the skills, you're proficient, you're ready to do the instrument things required to get on the ground through some weather. And that's a big thing. It's a get out of jail free card. And I had a friend mention instrument in that way. He said, it's not that you push your skills or push your luck. It's that it's that extra bit of safety buffer that you have in case something were to go wrong. And I really like that mentality. So committing to the climb by adding your instrument rating and or your commercial rating, I think is a really cool thing to work toward. And even as you start to just go through the knowledge part of it, maybe not even the flying part of it yet, you're going to start to grow already. So I really suggest you do that. Here's the next and probably the biggest thing that I suggest in moving forward if you want to be a professional pilot, but in recreational and fun operations. And this is a suggestion that I think would really help you. And so if you're a place where you can take notes, it'd be really helpful because I think this is something that you could do. So every 6 months, do the equivalent of what is a flight review with an instructor. So every 2 years, as pilots, we have to go through a flight review, and that flight review is bare minimum. It's 1 hour ground, 1 hour flight. I think it's that so that people that are really proficient can kind of check the box and move on, but people that aren't proficient and need some extra help or have been beyond the 2 years, you still take the same flight review. You'd be definitely more than 1 hour ground, 1 hour flight, okay? So what I'm suggesting is you do that every 6 months. You will literally get your logbook signed. You're gonna do the real thing. You're gonna go up with an instructor that can do it. Your flight review date will reset, et cetera, et cetera. You're gonna do the real thing. I think that's important to not just pretend, but we're actually going for the actual thing. Build a program that is unique to your deficiencies. This is gonna take some personal introspection, to know what your deficiencies are, where you could improve, what you forgot about, what you need to learn more about, what you're apprehensive about. Write down those thoughts and ideas and come up with a training plan, maybe even your own training plan. You could even get into a rhythm where you can write up your own flight review and prepare yourself to work on your deficiencies in the actual check ride, okay, or the flight review. So don't just do the minimum, but do what is necessary to learn those things and get up to snuff and get safe. And that is really, really helpful to do during that flight review. And you're doing it often enough, committing yourself to say, I'm going to call it for sure, like 5 to 10 hours of training. If you're doing this every 6 months, you're going to be able to do it within that amount of time frame, that amount of investment. 10 is even quite a bit if you're doing it that often and you are a regular flyer. That's even quite a bit. But this is just an opportunity that even if you aren't doing your instrument rating or commercial, that you're taking the opportunity to learn new things and grow. So I think that's a really, really, I think this is a great idea. Okay. I don't want to pat myself on the back. I don't think I'm even the one that came up with this, but I think it's a great idea. So outside of that, outside of your own personal program, coming up with or rather working on the basics again is also really important. I think those stick and rudder skills of flying the airplane through certain maneuvers, you know, slow flight stalls, landings and takeoffs, crosswinds, if you can do it with your instructor and have them really be brutal about the details on how you can improve and help you learn the details again, really get on top of you for that airspeed problem that we have, and you know, really just work through it. Make sure you're safe. Make sure you're growing, that you're always, always in that climb, committed to that climb. And make it fun. You can make this recurrent, your own recurrent program. You can make it fun. And that kind of is predicated on finding the instructor to do it, or maybe you go and do it with a different instructor each time. That's a great idea. Fly with different people that are from different backgrounds and know new and unique things that they can share with you. That's also really helpful. All right, and lastly, for committing to that climb is to stay connected. And that's where you are today. So when you can't fly or you aren't flying, that you're listening to the podcast, hey, here I am, videos. This is also a video podcast on YouTube. And I also do a lot of other videos on YouTube and things. There are other great people who do podcasts and videos. There's so much great information out there, too much of it really, for you to be learning from. And I would emphasize the learning. Find that stuff that you're going to be learning from. It can be entertaining too, but you know, keep growing, keep moving forward, keep flying fresh on your mind. Read and listen to books. I just listened to a book over the last several days called A Higher Call, which was about a World War II German ace and his, and he came up on a B-17 that was totally shot up. He could tell that everyone on board was really in bad shape. They didn't shoot at him. He didn't shoot at them. And he escorted them to safety. The story is much longer than that. It goes through the career of that pilot. It goes through many of the battles that they were in, et cetera, et cetera. But I learned a lot from it. Even about aviation, it was pretty kind of nerded out aviation-wise on the book as well. So, yeah, I just really enjoyed it. And even though it was an entertaining historical type of book, I really learned a lot from it. I've got Stick and Rudder, which is a fantastic book sitting here. Just keep learning. Keep doing things that are helping you learn. And fill your time, that extra time, with thought-provoking aviation things, okay? I think that's going to be really helpful. So, how are you going to stay proficient in your world? Have you ever seen those skills leave? I'm guessing you have if you've been flying for a while, and how did you get them back? Today has been kind of an antidote for curing this, I guess you could say. So committing to that climb of maybe getting the instrument rating commercial, definitely commit to your own recurrent program that is outside of the 2 years required. And or 24 calendar months, they call it, and stay connected to aviation. That's where you are today, so I know you're doing that, but think about the other things. So, yeah, the questions for today, so have those skills left you before? How did you get them back? Do you feel like the suggestions today are going to work? go ahead and join the conversation in the comments, certainly on YouTube. You can always message me too. I usually do a clip of this on Instagram and other social media platforms as well. Would love to hear your thoughts on this podcast today if it was something that helped you out. Join the conversation. Let's get it going. So that's it for today. Hope you guys enjoyed it. Remember that if you are working towards something, we do have online ground school here at Angle of Attack to help you pass your written. Those are all videos where I go through and present on different topics. I have stuff up on the screen and different videos that I show as well. Lots of my Alaska flair of flying that comes into that and a big safety mindset. And if you are working on a check ride, go check out Check Ride Ace for private, instrument, and commercial to get you prepared, studied up well, make sure you have all the materials and documents you need for that check ride. And that will be a very valuable thing for you as well. So thank you so much for being here. You are my road warriors out there. Thank you so much for being part of this community. Share this if you will. Definitely join in on the conversation. Spread the word about Angle of Attack. Really appreciate all that you guys do. And I wish you the best. If there's anything you ever need in your training, if you ever have a question that you feel just hasn't been answered, please reach out to me. Best place right now is direct messages on Instagram, and I would be happy to get back to you. Anyway, I wish you guys the best. Happy blue skies. And until next time, throttle on.
We sincerely thank you for joining us on Aviator Cast. Please subscribe through your favorite podcast service and leave a review. Check out more flight training resources at angleofattack.com. There you can find this podcast, many free aviation training videos, as well as online ground school for private instrument, commercial, and CFI. Got a check ride coming up? Check Ride Ace from Angle of Attack is your ultimate companion, guiding you through the process so you can conquer your big day. Thanks once again for joining us on Aviator Cast. Turn left, contact Ground Point Niner.